Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders, featuring the stories and songs of elders from the Native nations who lived and still live along the Lewis and Clark Trail. I'm Arlie Neskai of the Dene Nation. In the next hour, we'll meet late Lakota medicine man Martin Hybert and visit the renowned flutist Kevin Locke. We'll learn about herbal medicine, rediscover songs of the Sioux recorded in 1911, and hear the story of one of the last traditional buffalo hunts of the Sioux Nation.
When I fall ahead of you, stand up and look towards the east, and there you will find a medicine.
This is Wisdom of the Elders. Stay with us. This is Kuljadamo performing Feather Shake Highlander from the album Visions and Rhythms, Volume 2, on the Natural Visions label. Michael Giacomo performing Feathershake Highlander from the album Visions and Rhythms, Volume 2.
William Clark, September 26, 1804. I was met by about 10 well-dressed men who took me up in a robe highly decorated and set me down by the side of their chief. A place of 6 feet diameter was clear, and the pipe of peace raised on forked sticks, under which there were swan's down scattered. In the center, about 400 pounds of excellent buffalo beef as a present to us.
Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskai. It was a fair evening on the Bad River. Black Buffalo's camp was bustling. Elders and war leaders gathered in a council teepee to discuss the next day's affairs. Earlier, some of them had smoked with a St. Louis man named Meriwether Lewis and had agreed to meet with his party the next morning. They talked about the size of his company, the number of guns, the quality and quantity of the goods stacked in his boats. Black Buffalo was from a band of Teton Sioux known as the Lower Brule. Semi-nomadic buffalo hunters, they were camped near what is today the city of Pierre, South Dakota. Black Buffalo and his council talked about how these people from St. Louis were disrupting the delicate balance of power between the Teton and neighboring tribes. Every year, the Sioux traveled east to the Great Dakota Rendezvous on the James River to trade their products for British manufactured goods, guns, knives, tin pots, and needles. These goods were used to purchase corn and other foods from the village tribes up the Missouri. If Lewis and his company were allowed to pass and to establish trade upriver, the Teton would lose a vital market. It was decided they would try to stop the voyagers or charge a handsome tariff. Historian James Ronda.
Lewis and Clark think that they can easily rearrange not just trade, but politics, and that those relationships are somehow plastic or like clay, that you can mold and shape them to your own desires. What they don't understand is that Native people have made a substantial investment in those trading relationships. And to alter them is to ask folks to rearrange their lives, to rearrange where they might get guns and ammunition, where they might get steel needles and iron pots. And that's asking a great deal.
The next morning, Black Buffalo and the other leaders witnessed Lewis and Clark's display of military might and diplomacy. But the Indians were disappointed in the gifts they were offered. Trinkets and flags were meaningless symbols of a distant people. They demanded a more substantial tribute. The talks might have gone better. Communication was difficult for the lack of a good translator. The day ended with Clark drawing his sword and retreating to his pirogue. The next days were equally as tense, except for the times when differences were set aside and the men of the corps were treated to spectacular displays of Sioux culture. LaDonna Brave Bull Allard is tribal historian for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, Fort Yates, North Dakota.
We were fierce people. We ruled the plains at that time. There have always been leaders like us. People came to us for negotiation. They came to us to trade songs. They came to us because we traveled all over and we knew all the other tribes. And you came to us to make treaties. You came to us to make wars. The Lakota men were known for their bravery.
I'm Arlie Neskai, and this is Wisdom of the Elders. Today on Elder Wisdom, we honor the founder of Wisdom of the Elders, the late Lakota medicine man, Martin Hybare. He was born in 1919 in La Plante, South Dakota, on the Cheyenne River Indian Reservation, and raised by maternal grandparents, Samuel and Eliza Charger. Brian Bull has more.
Young Martin used to sit at his grandmother's feet, listening to the elders tell stories and talk about the importance of their traditions. They told him that one day he would become a medicine man and help to restore the ways of his people. As Martin grew older, he postponed his spiritual work to support his family, his wife, daughter, and three sons. He worked hard as a ranch hand, heavy equipment operator, and truck driver. And on the weekends, a saddle bronc rider, taking his sons around to Indian rodeos.
Then time came that, a little over 20 years ago, that I went up on the hill. But I had all these dreams and visions.
Martin's stepfather, Felix Green, was a medicine man from the Rosebud Indian Reservation. He explains how Felix helped him in a 1992 interview with Michael Toms of New Dimensions Radio.
I told him about my dreams and what is happening to me. And so he had a ceremony for me to find out about my ancestors. And so that night, they brought a white buffalo cap pipe out, and they locked me in an altar with it. And through this medicine man, through the cap pipe, told me all the stories about how many medicine people were in my blood relations. And he told me I was next in line, that I should take care of this right away. And so I did. And this is the way I've become to be a medicine man, a healer, or spiritual leader.
Uncle Martin had great-grandfathers and four great-grandmothers in his lineage who were medicine people. So Felix Green taught him the songs and put him up on Bear Butte for a vision quest. When he came down from the hill, he had the power to doctor people.
A lot of people needed me. And I even helped them on the Indians or doctoring. Because I knew a lot of things that was told to me in my ceremonies. When I said I'm altar, I work with four flags. And these colors are the black, the red, yellow, and the white. The four colors of people God created in the world.
Following the 1890 murder of the Lakota medicine man Sitting Bull and the massacre at Wounded Knee, the Lakota were forced to give up their own traditional ways of worship and change their religion to Christianity. The Sundance, Vision Quest, Ghost Dance, Sweat Lodge, and other ceremonies were outlawed for almost a century.
A lot of good stories and memories of our ancestors that are not here with us anymore. And we know it's sad, because what we want to know, they wasn't asked about it. Living in this fast life, fast cars, beer joints, liquor stores, all these has caused a lot of them to go wrong.
However, some Lakota continued to keep their ways alive. Martin spent years working with other medicine men to make the spiritual practices of his people legal again. In 1978, the Freedom of Religion Act was passed. Aware of the erosion of his people's ways, he knew their future depended upon them remembering who they were. He knew they needed to relearn the spiritual ways of their ancestors, and sometimes that meant pulling them off the streets so they could sober up and rebuild their lives.
And like the old people said back in the old way, they told me the old is coming back. And so this is why today we need some beautiful prayers to God, the Creator,
Martin grew up with ambivalence towards non-Indians because of the losses and transitions his people had to face. But he was gradually guided by visions and dreams to help all people learn to live and pray in unity.
You know, God created one religion. When he created everything, he created spirits. And then he put these spirits into everything he created. And so when he come down to the two-leggeds, the people, he created them all equal, with one religion. Everybody of the four colors at one time had sweat lodges all over the world. And they all had to go up on the hill to vision quest. Moses went up on the hill, vision quest, brought down the Ten Commandments. But when we come down to it, I think the native, we were the only one that followed up the old traditional way God gave us to all of us.
Controversy continues whether non-Indians or mixed bloods have the right to participate in Native ceremony. But Uncle Martin guided people of all colors to return to their earth-based spiritual roots using Lakota ceremony. He is an example to the world of how you can become colorblind.
And so when people say that these vision quests and sweat lodges belong to the Indian people alone, these are the things they never kept track of there. Culture. And this is why today it's kind of lost. Not really lost, but we say forgotten. Because what God created here on earth is still here. But it's just been forgotten. And so this is why people think that this all belonged to the Indians alone, but no, back in when he created everything, this was the way he created everything. To all human that walk Mother Earth. And so, maybe if you read the history back, you're going to find out that each country had a sweat lodge. Because that's the way God gave us all. Purification, a place to pray.
Uncle Martin journeyed on to the spirit world in 1995, but his teachings are still alive today. His biography, called The Seven Commandments of the White Buffalo Calf Maiden, will be published in 2007. For Wisdom of the Elders Radio, this is Brian Bull.
Brian Bull is Assistant News Director for Wisconsin Public Radio and is an enrolled member of the Nez Perce Tribe. He lives with his wife, two kids, and three cats in Madison, Wisconsin. If you'd like to learn more about any of the artists or music featured in our programs, visit us on the web at wisdomoftheelders.org. Coming up in Tribal Rhythms, Nico Wynn shares some music from nearly a century ago. And in Sacred Landscape, Judy Bluehurst Skelton introduces us to Teton herbalist Marie Randall and her granddaughter Annie Whitehat.
Rather than leaving our own communities and going to a university to learn about plants and herbs, why don't we ask our own elders what that knowledge is and learn from our own people? And so that's what we started doing.
Stay with us. I'm Arlie Neskai, and this is Wisdom of the Elders. For thousands of years, the use of plants for food, medicine, tools, clothing, homes, and ceremony has been an important part of Native American family and community life. Lewis and Clark learned of some of these edible and medicinal plants from the tribes they met along the trail. In time, they came to rely on them for their survival. Judy Bluehurst Skelton speaks about traditional herbal knowledge as we visit with Teton herbalist Marie Randall and her granddaughter, Annie Whitehat.
Native plants like echinacea, cedar, and willow, along with hundreds of others, have been used by Native people for aches and pains, bites and wounds, coughs, fevers, infections, and many other ailments. Different parts of the plants are used to make medicine, from roots, leaves, and flowers, to fruit, seeds, and bark. They're gathered with respect and thankfulness, each in their own season. Only what is needed is taken, always leaving many plants for future generations. This knowledge continues to be passed down from generation to generation. Grandmother Marie Randall and her granddaughter Annie Whitehat of the Teton Sioux continue their tradition of plant medicine and healing near the Rosebud Reservation in the Black Hills. Marie says,
My grandma goes out and she takes whoever is around as grandchildren. She gathers us and she prays with us before we go out. And when she finds a plant that she's looking for, she has us children stand around that plant and pray so that when she digs that plant out and she puts back the dirt, there will be another plant coming up for the survival of the people that would be looking for the plant.
Marie's granddaughter, Annie, continues the tradition.
We use echinacea. The strongest echinacea in the world grows here in our own backyard.
Like indigenous people throughout the world, Marie and Annie are concerned about the alarming loss of traditional gathering lands to encroaching development.
Today, it saddens us to have those plants torn up, you know, with machines, you know, and it's hard for us to go looking out for our plants. We can't stop the man-made way of life, you know, the laws that we have to go by to go out and dig for whatever we need for our children's survival. Grandma used to just walk out there with us out on a prairie.
We exercise our treaty rights to go out and harvest and hunt. Those are rights that we have that our grandparents, our grandfathers ensured that we were able to do this. So it's difficult because it's heartbreaking to see all the development in the Black Hills and know that there's so much medicine out here. People are building their homes there and these places aren't being protected.
Over the past 200 years, the loss of traditional foods and medicines has had a devastating effect on the health of Native Americans across the continent. Many tribes are working to restore and protect their hunting, fishing, and gathering places. As they restore their traditions, they regain their health.
We were at one time a healthy and vital nation that didn't rely on government-sponsored healthcare system. We were able to take care of ourselves, and we had a very strong relationship with the plant nation. So what we were asking was really what happened to that relationship. One of the women said, why don't we learn from our elders rather than leaving our own communities and going to a university to learn about plants and herbs? Why don't we ask our own elders what that knowledge is and learn from our own people?
In 1998, Annie traveled to Cuba to study their healthcare system and was very impressed with their incorporation of plant medicine into their national healthcare system. In 2000, she participated in the Indigenous Women's Network Leadership Program and created the community-based project called Sinkanju Way of Life Project.
So we started a series of workshops, and now as part of this project, we have our herbal cooperative, which we call the Suchangu Lakota Herbal Cooperative, and the idea is to provide workshops for our community members to really teach hands-on applications of how to make these remedies and how people can do this in their own kitchen with plants that are identifiable in our own communities. And at the same time, they'll help us make a big batch that we can then market for sale. And the funds go back into our project to further our work.
Renewing their rich herbal traditions, Annie and Marie and the Sinkanju Way of Life ensure a healthy future for generations to come.
And I live that life. In the morning when I get up, cup my hand, get the water and drink it, and ask Tongashila to heal me if there's anything wrong and give me the right wisdom to share with other people.
With each step, with each heartbeat, with each breath. Osadada.
Educator, writer, and herbalist Judy Bluehorse Skelton is Nez Perce, Chickasaw, and Cherokee. She lives and works in Portland, Oregon. Yo, hey, 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 oh, hey, oh, hey. With our songs, we call to the universe. Music is healing. Mourning the loss of his son, Earl Bullhead discovered a song in the Francis Densmore collection recorded nearly a century ago. It encouraged him as a maker of songs for his people. On today's Tribal Rhythms, Nico Nguyen presents the music of this powerful tribe, both past and present.
One of the largest tribes of Native people in North America is the Sioux tribe, sometimes called the Great Sioux Nation. The Sioux Nation is actually made up of three separate divisions of Siouan language speakers. In the eastern part of South Dakota, the Isante Sioux speak the Dakota dialect. The Yankton Sioux, or Ihungtua, speak the Nakota dialect, and the Western, or Teton Sioux, speak Lakota. For the Teton Sioux, as in other tribal nations, music is not just entertainment. It is woven into daily life. There are songs for romance, songs for healing, songs for ceremony and prayer, and songs for dying. Earl Bullhead, a Teton Sioux, is known throughout Indian country as a talented musician and singer. He speaks of how the untimely death of his son led him back home and into the music of his traditional culture.
When I first caught word of that, I had to be tranquilized. I got hysteric. So I came back to McLaughlin and went to see my Aunt Evelyn. And I always go to her because she pretty much raised us. And she said, you know what? She said, there's a trailer house over here. And she said, you can stay there. So I went into that trailer house, and I was there for 10 months, and Lala Joe, or Joe Flying By, Opta Iaya, which he called himself, Clifford One Feather, and Jimmy La Martinez were my visitors. They would bring me sandwiches, or they understood the traditional way, you know, staying out of the public eye as much as possible.
Out of that terrible time of loss, Earl Bullhead became immersed in language and music. He became a singer, composer, and later a teacher of Teton music.
And so, coming from that perspective, I started saying, I need to do something. And so I started writing songs, typing songs on a typewriter. I picked it up and started concentrating on different things. And there were a lot of things, songs that I wrote and written or translated while I was mourning my son. Yeah. So in that process, I found a song in a Dinsmore collection, and it's called the Individual Honor Song. But when I first heard that, it was like instantaneous. I liked the tune. I heard the words. I sang it. I did not understand the history of it.
Bullhead had discovered a recording from the Francis Dinsmore collection made for the Bureau of American Ethnology nearly a century before. While scratchy and difficult to hear, the recording was a doorway to the past. In 1904, Francis Dinsmore began traveling the open lands of Indian country with a hand-cranked phonograph that recorded on wax cylinders. Having studied at the Oberlin Conservatory of Music and Harvard University, she grew interested in Native music when she heard Apache warrior Geronimo humming a song. With what was then state-of-the-art field recording equipment, she paid singers a quarter a song and had them sing down the throat of a specially built galvanized horn connected to her phonograph. Sometimes in extreme heat, the cylinders would threaten to melt like candle wax. The technology was so unfamiliar to one singer that on hearing the playback of his song, he asked, "How could it learn the song so fast? That's a hard song." In the 1930s, the Dinsmore collection was stored in cool museum chambers. It lay like a bear hibernating in its cave, waiting for spring, when the original owners, people like Earl Bullhead, would take the old music and bring it forth into the world again. Native music continues to evolve and to reflect the lives of the people. Songs continue to be written even as old songs are restored. One example is the song Earl and his son wrote in honor of his wife's mother, his children's grandmother, for her funeral.
And in the process, my missus came back and she said, "I want you to compose a song for Grandma, from us," she said. From our family. So my boy and I that evening sat down and we started talking about a lot of history that we were told on different plants and how she used to always have chayaka or peppermint tea. And so we had memories of time we shared with her. So we thought about those things. And so we started writing the words and we started using a laptop and putting the words in and we started trying to convey, you know, what she used to do for many people, I can imagine. And so in the process, then through the night, then we were happy with what we were trying to say. And so the next day we sang for her at her when all the services were over, and just before they laid her to rest, we sang this song. Kako ja me che chana utako ye om So the words in the song talk about Kakoja, grandchildren, and my children, my relatives, to pray for each other. Because there's a lot of history. And always remember that it's only the earth that's going to endure. And to think of your relatives and to pray for them.
For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Nico Wind.
Dr. Francis Densmore was relentless in tracking and recording the music of many tribes over a 60-year period beginning in 1911. The Smithsonian Densmore collection includes over 2,000 wax cylinders. Efforts of people like Densmore have made it possible for Earl Bullhead and others to revive songs that may have been lost and use them to heal and honor his people. Tribal Rhythms is written by Milton Jamie Lee, produced by Clark Salisbury and Larry Johnson, and hosted by Nico Wind. Many thanks to Earl Bullhead and to Smithsonian Folkways Records for the use of songs from the Francis Densmore collection. For more information about our guests or to help support our program through Friends of Wisdom of the Elders, check out our website at wisdomoftheelders.org. Coming up on Contemporary Rhythms, Milt Lee visits Lakota flutist Kevin Locke. Turtle Island storyteller Zona Lone's Arrow shares the story of her grandfather, who was nearly killed on one of the last buffalo hunts of the Hoopapa band of the Tetum people.
This buffalo was coming, grunting, and the ground shook above him. The buffalo talked to him.
Stay with us. I'm Arlie Neskai, and this is Wisdom of the Elders.
Wisdom of the Elders Radio is produced in Portland, Oregon, with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail National Park Service, National Endowment for the Humanities, and National Endowment for the Arts. Special thanks to Native American Public Telecommunications and American Indian Radio on Satellite. We have expanded upon today's program at our website at wisdomoftheelders.org. You can also check out our American Indian Speakers Bureau. Visit Turtle Island Storytellers Network at turtleislandstorytellers.net. We would like to acknowledge the gifts of music played on our program today. Learn more about our featured artists at our website at wisdomoftheelders.org. Special thanks to New Dimensions Radio for providing archival materials for today's Elder Wisdom, featuring the late Martin Hybear.
You must not forget me when I'm long gone, because I love you so dearly, sugar honey. So we die, so we die, we die, oh, hey, till we die, oh. You must not forget me when I'm long gone, because I love you so dearly, sugar honey. So we die, so we die, we die, oh, hey, till we die, oh. Hey, hey, do we da, do we da, we da, yo. Do we da, we da, we da, yo. Do we da, we da, we da, yo. Hey, do we da, yo. Do we da, do we da, yo. To be your day, to go in da, and I want no hope. To be your day, to win da, and I want no hope. To be your day, to win da, and I want no hope.
On today's Contemporary Rhythms, Milt Lee travels to Wakpala, South Dakota, to visit with Lakota and Anishinaabe hoop dancer and flute player, Kevin Locke.
Anyone who has browsed through Native music titles has seen Kevin Locke's music. He plays flute, lots of different flutes, but he also sings traditional songs. With his roots planted in Lakota tradition, Kevin keeps the culture alive by stretching out. Last year he created a really new sound, unlike anything we've heard before. Thank you. a sound. To hear old music making its way into the modern world fascinates me. To learn more, William Ward and I cruise over to Kevin's place on one of our trips to chat about what he's doing.
Come in, come in, come in. Come on down.
Kevin greets us at the door.
Is he making you crazy?
While we set up, William fretted like a mother hen about Kevin's grandson.
Oh, he wants another one.
We hung out until Ojitika went downstairs to play. There's something fine about seeing a man in the center of his life. But it was also great to find out what this new album, Midnight Strongheart, was all about.
It was I've been wanting to do that for a long time, but a recording project where we could incorporate all these modern idioms, music idioms, like try and take some of these tunes, these traditional compositions, and express it in a modern idiom, like whether it's blues or rock or anything like that. Scouting around for somebody that could really help us with that type of collaboration for quite a long time, and we finally found the right perfect mix. And there's a guy, he lives in Ojai, California. His name is Jim Kaliri, and he's well credited on that recording. I had all these tunes, and so I took all these tunes to him, and I went through the tunes, explained everything to him, and we just had a big kind of like a brainstorming session. It involved quite a few trips for me out there to California, and so some of the recordings in there, some of the tunes in there, are like the result of that, and some of them are really extemporaneous.
The sound is rich in Kevin's music. Everything from rock to zydeco to blues. But all of it is based in traditional songs that he learned years ago.
Well, for instance, now, there's that blues piece, and that one, it's really an old song. In fact, there's two tracks on there, and one of them is a short vocal interpretation of the song according to the traditional composition of it. Then right after it is the modified version. And and I've got it on the liner notes, but if you listen to the song, you're going to hear it says it's a real old song, but it says Oyate wa mayanka po lela kowichohan trewahila na la kota bihegulu hewa chamiena iote wa kie. That's what the song is saying, and they're saying the person is saying that they're telling this, saying the people, you see me, look at me. You see that I really cherish my Indian ways, and this is my love, my heart's desire. But you see, because of this, I'm experiencing difficulties, and so I think this song has a lot to say about the whole early reservation period, this whole process of acculturation, and the heartbreak that people experience trying to keep on. Hold on to their, their good ways, and yet finding that this is really difficult in the face of the dominant civilization or dominant culture. I used to travel around with this group from Rosebud. They were it was Ben Black Bear Sr. and Lloyd One Star and the old Ironwood Singers and a group of us, we performed different traditional dances. And one of the dances was the Buffalo Dance. Nobody's used it. It's been like 30 years since I've ever heard them sing it. So then I just loved that tune. And so then I thought, well, I'll use it. It's a beautiful song, and what it's saying is it's about the force that moves the buffalo over the country.
Music, whether traditional or contemporary, comes from life. It's part of what draws me to the evolving tunes of Indian country. In some songs, Kevin blends his traditional music with the writings of the Baha'i faith. This song, Abu Abu, is a lullaby. When translated, some of the lyrics say, "And may your dreams be full of delight, and may you always smile, and may your life be full and complete." My favorite song on Midnight Strongheart is Silent Love. It's a short Lakota song that means, "I love you, I love you, I love you, but for now, we have to keep it a secret." This album, Midnight Strongheart, should be off the charts. As I listen to it more and more, I hear the layers and I hear the life. Kevin's Lakota name means the first to arise.
So I always just tell everybody, you know, people ask me about my background. I say I'm just a member of the human being tribe. Yeah, and that's what if you check out in the Lakota language, when they refer to people, they say Wahunumpa, two-legged ones. Wahunumpa oyate oapa emachana. I'm just a member of the human being tribe.
From Wakpala, South Dakota, this is Wisdom of the Elders.
Contemporary Rhythms is written and produced by Milt Lee of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe and his wife Jamie Lee, who live and work in Rapid City, South Dakota. Check out their website, realrez.com, for more of their work.
Before they go on a buffalo hunt, they go to sweats and they pray. They cleanse themselves and purify themselves with sage.
Vast herds of millions of buffalo once grazed a North American prairie and formed the basis of the culture, economy, and spirituality of the Plains Indians. In less than 100 years after Lewis and Clark, indiscriminate killing reduced the buffalo to near extinction. Today, on Turtle Island Storytellers, Zona Lone's Arrow shares the tale of her grandfather, Joseph Noel Twohorn, who went on one of the last traditional buffalo hunts of the Hunkpapa Band of the Teton Nation.
As they went, they found the buffalo. And so, as he went, he rode up to this one buffalo, and he shot him as he was running. As the buffalo ran, he pointed at his heart area and let go, and the arrow went piercing through him. This wounded buffalo turned on him and his horse, and he gored his horse in the side. And this horse went overhead, and my grandfather was thrown. And how long he laid there, he don't remember, because he was knocked out. When he came to, he could hear the thunder was gone from the hooves of the buffalo as they went beyond his hearing. He looked, and he saw this huge buffalo coming towards him. He was wounded too. And he thought, "Well, I'll give up, because this buffalo's going to kill me. He's going to gore me, and I will be put to death too." So he prayed. My grandfather prayed, and he said, "Tunkashala ushimalayo. Tunkashala unshimalayo," he said. "Us Indians, we pray all the time. We don't let go of our Creator. We always pray for everything." And that's what Grandpa did. And he had faith, so he laid still, and this buffalo was coming, grunting and The ground shook above him. The buffalo talked to him. And the buffalo said, Hakuja, he mie elo. Nitrunkashila he mie elo, he said. He said, Grandson, grandson, this is me, your grandfather. The buffalo called him White Butterfly. He said, Grandson, White Butterfly, this is me, your grandfather. He said, When after I leave you, grandson, I am going into the spirit world now. You see all these buffaloes, he said, them are your people. Them were my people. I ruled them. I taught them. I provided for them. I guarded them. But now I am going to leave you, grandson, White Butterfly. But from now on, after I leave you, your name is going to be No Two Horn. Remember that. And he said, When I fall ahead of you and leave you, he said, stand up and look towards the east. And there you will find a medicine, which is the Wiohiampataha, he said, the east, which is a life, new life. And Wiohiampataha, the south, that means new life and healing. You will find another root, another medicine there. I'm giving these to you to use. And then when you turn to the west, Wiohpeataha, he said, you will find another medicine. You take the root and you use it. He said, you will be living a long time and long life for you teach the people how to live and to have a long life. He said, Grandson, I had a long life. That's why I don't have no horns. He said, and I'm glad that I'm going to leave you. But you turn to the north, and there you'll find another medicine. Take the root, because that's for strength. For your life, use these four roots, and them are your medicines for life. And he also knew about that horse that was gored. He said, the water that you carry on your side, he said, and take that root, the new life, he said, take that root and chew it. Take the water from your side, he said, and wash your animal that was gored. Wash it off and put all the insides back in there. And chew up that life, that healing. Chew that up and blow it onto that horse. And it will heal your horse. And the new life, blow that into his nostrils and blow the strength from the north and blow that into his nostrils and rub him with long life. And your horse will be all right. That's the first miracle to show you that I'll be with you all your life. Your people are depending upon you, grandson. So take this and other miracles. You can find out that you are from the Tatanka Oyate. You're going to be the first of the Tatanka Oyate. When any trouble comes, we're going to come and help you. We will be with you, he said. And so then he gave up the spirit and left. So my grandfather did just what he told him. I live For what my grandfather said was the truth, and many things have happened to me to show me that I am from the Buffalo people. And my grandfather, he lived to be over 100 years old. Everything he did was good for the benefit of his people. Thank you. Oh.
An example to younger generations, Zona Lone's Arrow is a respected elder who lives on the Standing Rock Indian Reservation in Fort Yates, North Dakota. When Lewis and Clark met the Teton Sioux, they may not have seen the complex richness of their culture they were attempting to bring under the sovereignty of the Great White Father back in Washington, D.C. Across North America, there existed one of the most sophisticated fabrics of socio, political, spiritual life ever developed on Earth. Hundreds of tribes with hundreds of distinct languages, philosophies, and governmental systems coexisted side by side. Over the millennia, a balance as delicate as the great web of life was created between the nations. Today, as Native nations, we face many of the harsh realities of modern life. Yet there lives and breathes a spirit of renewal based on the tools of the present and teachings of the past. Our children go forward one step at a time. May their endeavors bring balance again to the people. Thanks for joining us today on Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskai. Hagonet, till we meet again.
Wisdom of the Elders is an American Indian nonprofit organization with a mission of cultural preservation, education, and race reconciliation. We record and share the oral history and cultural arts of indigenous elders, storytellers, historians, and song carriers. Wisdom of the Elders Radio is produced in Portland, Oregon, with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail National Park Service, National Endowment for the Humanities, and National Endowment for the Arts. Special thanks to our producers, Clark Salisbury, Brian Bull, Judy Bluehorse Skelton, and Milton Jamie Lee. Field producer, William Ward. Story editor and director, Larry Johnson. Music director, Nico Wind. Archivist, Paul Woodsong. Web team, Clark Salisbury and Rebecca Freeman. Executive producer, Rose Highbear.